Hey, Tom, you're our sales pro. Tell us about your podcast.
Do you have many boomers that are rebels?
Believe it or not, one of my first clients was a boomer.
All right, I want you to turn me into a rebel today.
I'm a Philly girl. I listen to Rocky, and I'm going up those stairs, man, and I could do anything.
And I came back from corporate, and I sat at the desk, and I actually had to do sales, and I was mortified.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us today for OK Boomer, Teach Me Sales. I'm Kelly Bloomer.
And I'm Tom Bloomer.
OK, Tom, you're our sales pro. In 30 words or less, can you tell us about this podcast?
I'm going to try. You know, us salespeople like to talk, Kelly.
You sure do.
All right, 30 words or less.
Can you do it?
Well, if you're a sales pro and you're looking to grow in your sales career, if you like good, lively sales discussion, I think this is going to be a show for you. I've walked your walk for over 30 years in sales. I've knocked on the doors and overcome the same obstacles I think you may be facing as a seller, a sales manager, and as a VP of sales. I currently help assess, build, and train high-performing media sales teams. Well, Kel?
Yeah, you really went over 30 words.
Okay, Tom, who's the boomer teaching us sales today?
Well, Kel, we've got a phenomenal show. We have four LinkedIn superstars. And what's really cool is I've gotten to know the four of our guests today. It's one of our panel segments that
okay.
We've been doing, our talk it outs. It's truly a great listen, especially for anyone who's marketing or engaging with people on LinkedIn. And, you know, it's also an exciting week for me because I think I'm finally going to start sleeping again.
That would be exciting.
Yeah.
Haven't done that in a long time.
No, it's been a long but a fun journey as I put together my first sales book. Started it last summer at about the same time that I was reaching out and engaging and connecting with people on LinkedIn. So several of the guests today I met while I was writing the sales book, Teach Me Sales, which, by the way, I'll put my sales hat on here. It's released and people can purchase it today.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. So this should be a very exciting episode.
Absolutely. You can hear my enthusiasm. And at the end of the show, for people who hang on and go to the very end, we give information and we got some great advanced praise on the book. So we share a little bit about that. They can look for information in the show notes. But you know, what you're going to hear in this panel is, number one, you're going to hear, I'm a little nervous when I start, because these aren't just for anybody's.
Right.
These are for really, really strong LinkedIn people. So you're going to hear me a little bit nervous in the beginning, and then I get into it. The good news?
Yes.
I didn't have to talk much.
Really? You not talk much?
Yeah, but because these people talk. And, you know, we've got one of the people on is Mary Grothy, and I just want the listeners to know, don't check your phone. You did not mistakenly hit it up to 1x or 2x when you hear the speed. That's just Mary. She is just full of excitement.
Wow.
And one of my favorite people on LinkedIn and a fellow podcaster, Scott Ingram, you know, it was interesting. He's been doing this a long time.
Mm-hmm.
He was patient. He sat back. He listened. But once the door was open, boy, he just took over the show. And it's fun to hear. We also have Marcus Chan.
Okay.
We also have Katie Mullen. I'm going to share with the audience in a minute a little bit about them, and then we're going to jump into the show.
Sounds good. Let's go.
So before we completely jump in, I will tell you a little bit more about our panel today. We have Marcus Chan. Marcus is the founder of Venley Consulting Group. He helps B2B sales professionals sell more and sell better without needing years of experience. He does this through his coaching and training programs. Marcus is an executive member of the Forbes Business Council and has also been featured in Forbes, Yahoo Finance, MarketWatch, Salesforce, and as a LinkedIn top voice. We're also joined by Katie Mullen. Katie is CEO of MMS Consulting, and she's host of the Golden Rule of Selling podcast, one of my favorites, as you know, Kelly, to listen to. She's an accomplished sales trainer and helps train big sales teams. She's currently offering individual training as well. We're joined as well by Scott Ingram. Scott is the host of Sales Success Stories and Daily Sales Tips podcast. He's the author of three books, Sales Success Stories, B2B Sales Mentors, and Finding Sales Success on LinkedIn. And you know what's really cool, Kel?
What, Tom?
He's also a quota-carrying sales professional today. He's still involved in sales through professional services company Relationship One. And last but certainly not least, we have Mary Grothy. Mary is a former number one sales rep. Many of our listeners may not realize in our opening, that's her voice that they hear as they go through from season one episode that we did with Mary. She is a former number one sales rep who, after selling millions and breaking sales records, formed a company called House of Revenue. It's a Denver-based firm of fractional revenue leaders who currently lead the marketing, sales, customer service, and rev ops departments for 12 companies nationwide. I told you this is a good panel, Kel.
It is. It really is.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. We are really excited for our OK Boomer episode today. We have four of the biggest and strongest LinkedIn voices that I've come across in the past year. Really excited. So we're going to have a lot of fun. And we're going to jump right in. So as you can see there, those that are watching the video clip, you just saw Mary Grothy from the House of Revenue. Mary is with us today. Scott Ingram from Sales Success, Sales Stories, and Daily Sales Tips podcast. And Scott, hopefully you're going to tell us a little bit about your sales summit that's coming up later this fall.
I can do that.
We're opening up, right? People are going to finally be able to start doing things like this in person.
This is going to be the biggest one yet because we've all been repressed. It's time to get out of house arrest and have a blast in Austin.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of good reasons to come to Austin, but you'll share that one with us right there. It'll be great. We have Marcus Chan. Marcus is in the house. Marcus is going to be bringing us some great stuff. And we want to hear about more of those seven-figure deals as we go through today, Marcus. And Katie Mullen from the Golden Rule of Selling podcast and now a boot camp. Right, Katie?
You got it. I'm very excited about it.
Fantastic. So we have a lot to share. As I was working on this, Scott brought up a really good question. As you know, through his podcast, he's bringing people sales tips every single day. And what he wanted from this group is to share something right now recently that's making a big impact for you. What do you see that you're doing or other salespeople are doing that's really making a difference? Katie, you want to get us started?
Sure. So this is something actually that I feel like I have known for a long time, but it was really fun to see some research back it up. So I've always been a big proponent of going into a customer meetings literally with a pen and a piece of paper and taking notes and asking all kinds of questions before you ever get into, you know, talking about your own product. That's the way I always sell. That's what I always promote. But recently Gong came out with some research that really backs this up. And I was really surprised because they were actually surprised about this. They said that you should not use PowerPoint slides when doing a discovery call. And I thought this was great because they did a bunch of research that really backs this up. And I think it's so important. And I think in this virtual world that we're living in, maybe people feel like they have to do PowerPoints just because they're doing a Zoom or something. But you know, you wouldn't go into a real meeting with a customer using PowerPoint. So I think it's really important that we not do that in the virtual world as well. And so I loved seeing that research that kind of backed up that that theory that I've always had.
So, but I spend a lot of time on this PowerPoint, Katie. It's really nice. You don't want me to lead with that?
Yeah, the PowerPoints created by salespeople too usually look the best. That was a joke. If you don't have a marketing department with a focus on sales enablement, it's really quite honestly scary when the salesperson last minute is like, I'm going to edit this slide. And then they put so much text on it and it's running off and they forget like Zoom etiquette when you're sharing your screen that there could be the camera photos or whatever pictures over. And so you can't even see like what's on the deck and it's terrible. So yeah, to that point, I think it's overdone. And I remember selling for Paychex, the payroll and HR company. And in my second stint with them, the big name competitors, their salespeople were just showing up to discovery and demos with this whole show. I'm like, what is this? I used to sell for this company and I didn't have one piece of sales enablement, anything. And it was just me having a conversation with my laptop and like discovery. I just wanted to answer their questions by showing them how the technology solved it, which most salespeople can't do anyway. But it was one of those where I'm like, oh my gosh, these competitors really show up with something big. And I didn't have that. So I'm actually personally not a fan of ducks at all in that. I feel like the salesperson needs to own it with their own passion, conviction, and enthusiasm. And the only thing you should be showing a prospect is what is going to speak their language, identify with how you solve their problems, make their life better, any sort of ROI, and move the needle forward. They just need to have their questions answered. So I'm with you on that.
If I never saw another PowerPoint slide in my life, I think that would be cool. I think that would be great.
I'm okay with it.
So, I think sometimes too, people forget that there's a difference between doing a training and doing a sales pitch. You know, in a sales pitch, they don't need to know every single detail of your product. You're not giving them a test afterward. in a training where, you know, maybe you're selling a product where they need to know all the buttons and everything. Sure. Yeah. PowerPoints can be real helpful, but definitely not in the early part of a sales pitch. And really, even as you said, Mary, in the latter parts, very much minimizing, if you are going to do it, just get rid of all the text and everything, I think is so important.
Yeah, I also love the theory behind a leave behind deck versus a sales deck in a presentation. And this is something that if you can figure out the difference between the two, it's super powerful, because to your point, Katie, you shouldn't drown that prospect right in the meeting. Holy cow, all this data, all these details. However, they're only going to retain a few nuggets of information from the meeting. So a strategic leave behind deck, which you should have multiple versions of it, that is built for that type of buyer with that type of ICP for that specific scenario with a case study, the stuff they actually care about. And a leave behind deck answers a lot of the questions that will come up afterwards and be a part of the meetings that the salesperson is not invited to after. It's the meeting after the meeting. And so it's what can you put in their hands that helps them in that conversation. So I actually feel like there's a transition between what am I showing them on the screen while I'm talking to them? Because I feel like the salesperson should just own that conversation. There's more of an emotional connection when you're not taking up the whole screen with a deck. Like, let's just talk as human beings, because they'll remember more of that, because it's human connection and interaction versus, I love what you said, like memorizing it later for the quiz or whatnot.
Well, and the truth of what happens is, you know, with the sales professional, once they're in that meeting and they ask a couple of questions and then they have like a brain fart or they black out, then like, crap, let me pull up this deck now and let me go into a pitch fest, because they don't know what else to talk about, right? So then they start going through, and suddenly your disco becomes entirely focused on the company that you're selling for, the sales rep, versus actually focusing on who you're talking to, having a real conversation, uncovering them, seeing if they're even qualified to continue a deeper conversation. That's why there's so much power in getting rid of the deck and just having a real conversation to uncover, is it a good fit for both companies?
That's a good point. And Mary, one of the things I saw you posted on recently, you had a video clip talking about if you're turning over a number of your salespeople, is the problem really with the salespeople, or potentially is it with the company itself? And are companies teaching sales reps how to do this correctly, or are they handing them that PowerPoint and saying, here's what you do when you get in front of the customer?
Most of them don't even have the PowerPoint. I mean, it depends on the size of the company that you're looking at. So we specialize with the second stage growth companies, which predominantly are between 2 and 20 million in revenue. And usually the CEO or founder or executive team and that one or two legacy salesperson that's been there forever, that probably shouldn't still be there, but they can't let the person go. That's usually the construct of your sales department. And so then they keep continuing to try to hire salespeople, but there's no sales playbook. There's no sales ecosystem. There is no training. There's probably a significant lack of sales enablement material from a marketing standpoint. My guess is that many of those companies, the website was built in 2005 and they have a pixelated logo. So there's a lot of challenges with the salesperson going out to sell. So one of the most common things that we see in these smaller companies, now I can separate them out into two. So you have mature organizations that have hit a revenue plateau. Some of our clients have been around 15, 20, 30 years. And so it's just this revitalization. And really, Tom, they don't have any of that. And they've just been training through osmosis. It's like, here's your laptop, go sell. And then they wonder, and they don't know how to assign quotas. And so the numbers are unrealistic because it's based on an arbitrary number that sounded good to somebody someday versus a data-driven number that's backed on what the territory can actually produce and understanding their ICP. So there's a whole lot of things wrong there. For smaller companies that are in that stage of growth and potentially going into scale, and you're transitioning away from the CEO and founder selling and moving into hiring that first salesperson, they may have some materials in place, but they just don't have time. They are maxed out. Nobody was assigned the task of onboarding a salesperson and setting them up for success. So they may have some of those enablement materials. So the salesperson, without having that knowledge, the training, the mentorship, and the ability to get really, really comfortable in mastering the conversation, not the pitch, the conversation, will absolutely default in the moment of panic to whatever they've been provided. And so, yeah, it's really not the salesperson's fault in most of these cases, because really sales is a tough profession. And we all know that, which is why there's like whatever multi-trillion dollar industry for training and coaching. And it's a real thing. And it's actually extremely helpful for salespeople. It's not just like some check the box. If it's done the right way, sales reps can really be built for great performance, but most companies skip that step.
Yeah, and I find a lot of times too, they end up repeating the same cycle over and over, right, Mary? Like, as they continue to grow the company, and then maybe they eventually have a sale. Well, that sales leader maybe was the best rep they had, right? That kind of stuck around. Then that person's kind of training on the same bad habits, and then they never truly learn how to hire, train, onboard, bring someone in from scratch and make them truly great. They're just used to a machine that kind of keeps running, and they churn and burn reps. So you end up having such high turnover over and over and over. Now, if the company continues to grow, if that leader gets, you know, maybe gets promoted or leaves, you have this endless cycle of running the same issue nonstop versus fixing some of these systemic issues, having a real playbook in place from hiring, training, development, from sales leadership to reps, and then ongoing as well. So you continue to grow that company too in a sustainable way while reducing turnover.
I agree. The rep should be saying, please allow me to get on the phone. Not, okay, what do I say on the phone, right? It's two completely different setups for their training. They should have enough onboarding and coaching and mentorship and ability to get through the process where they're like, please just let me sell, versus the rep that you throw into the sales position. They're like, great, now what am I supposed to do? Does anybody have a manual around here of how to sell for this company, or how am I supposed to figure it out?
Go hang with the top rep and see what they do. Copy them.
That's dangerous.
That's
not bad in theory.
It's happening every dangerous. Day. Yeah. So Marcus, you get a lot of these reps coming to you, right? They're with a new company. They're struggling a little bit. They want to grow. What's job number one? How do you get started with them and help that individual rep get going?
Well, I think the first thing is a lot of time with these reps when they're struggling, and let's just assume it's a full cycle rep. A lot of times I find when they start a new company, you know, when they start a new company, if they are provided training, it's maybe product training. So they're coming in there, they're getting product training, et cetera, but they're not really confident themselves quite yet. And this is regardless of their level of experience. So a lot of times, if they're full cycle, they usually are immediately struggling with top of the funnel work. Like, they're not able to generate enough appointments to get to where they want to go. Sometimes they get lucky. Maybe there's some good inbound leads and they're able to close some deals. But if they really look at the numbers, they realize pretty quickly they got lucky with some inbound leads. And if they want to have sustainable performance, they need to figure out a way to really consistently generate top of the funnel work. So a lot of times early on, it's working with them to really help them understand, own their pipeline, they own their territory, and they can't rely just on inbound leads. If they truly want to consistently exceed their quota, they can't just wait around. They have to go and build pipeline every single day. And that's across the board from being able to master the key skills anywhere from phone work to email to social selling, but being able to mix all of them in, especially in today's world, it's not as simple as say, hey, I make one phone call, I'm going to get a hold of them. It may require 8 to 9 different touches across the board, from, you know, LinkedIn to Twitter to emails to voice drops to finally get hold of them 2 weeks later to book that meeting. So having them understand that is so key versus saying, you know what, I sent one cold email to them, they didn't respond, they're not interested, on to the next one. Well, that's just not the reality. They may have zero familiarity with you, so you need to do more on the top of the funnel work to build up that consistency. This is actually why I'm very bullish on platforms like LinkedIn, because you can do so much with LinkedIn if you do it properly, from inbound work, outbound work, prospecting from every part of the sales funnel to move through to a close. But most reps aren't necessarily thinking that long term. So when you think about top of the funnel work and pipeline, it's so vital to think of it a long term wise. It's not what am I going to close today. It's what can I do today that will help me tomorrow and down the road. And when you start thinking that way, you can actually build a better pipeline. It's more consistent, and it helps eliminate that commission breath that most reps get, that cycle where they go from job to job every 12 to 18 months.
Yeah. No, it's so important. And it's interesting. Mary, I saw you posted about it recently, and Katie as well. Mary, in your post, you mentioned that you received your third cold call of the year, and you booked, you know, you booked this company to talk. And I'm sitting there, when I was on the street every day, that's what I did all day, right? I was calling people every single day. And it seems like now that's a lost art form, right? People, or there's other ways for them to reach out. Mary, Katie, you were talking about cold calling. Why are people not doing it as much? And how do we get them back into seeing what Marcus was just talking about?
Well, I think there is a legitimate concern these days with cold calling because, you know, when my specialty was always selling into hospitals. And so you could go through the switchboard and most of the time they wouldn't see who the caller ID was coming from, which I do think is a valid concern, particularly if you're, you know, calling multiple times and they're not answering. And so I had some pushback when I posted because people said, well, wait a minute, hang on. Everybody's working from home now. And so you can't just, you know, make these calls and have, because they're going to see who it is and they're probably going to block you. And they, you know, you don't want to be seen as calling them and pestering them. So I do agree that with COVID, that was the way that things have changed a little bit. We need to be a little more cognizant and a little more cautious of that. And calling people's cell phone, there is a difference, nuance to that than calling, you know, going through a switchboard. But that being said, I think cold calling is one of the true lost art forms of the sales process. And I think that people don't want to do it. And people claim that it's dead because it's uncomfortable and it's not very fun. And call reluctance is a real thing. And so I do think, though, that there are techniques to do it that make it more fun, because it is fun to book those meetings. And if you can get somebody on the phone, they're so much more likely to open up to you, again, if you don't use PowerPoints, than if you are, you know, emailing them or even on LinkedIn. You know, if you can get them talking, think about, oh, you're going to gather all the information you need to win that deal if you're asking questions in a correct way. If you're not asking questions in a correct way and you're interrupting them, then you're not going to get those valuable nuggets that you can use later to craft your pitch and your presentation in a way that says, this is what you told me you needed, and here's how I can meet that need.
Yeah, I just feel like it's changed dramatically with COVID, and also salespeople were really excited to finally get an excuse that management would agree with, that it's cold calling became so hard. But now everyone's like, yeah, you're right. It's probably really difficult because we don't know if people are in the office or at home. So you should just never cold call again. Anywho, on that note, there are ways to go about it and do it in a really powerful way. And the smartest salespeople, they never gave up and they never stopped. They honestly just used their figure it out factor, and they adjusted and they shifted and they brought in a lot more empathy, because now we don't know if we're calling somebody on their cell phone and if they're helping their first grader get on their Zoom class at 1 o'clock, or if they've got three kids at home and it's the lunch hour and they're being a mom and they're being an executive. We don't know these things, but we can be empathetic when we call without asking or saying that we hope that they're staying safe and healthy during this unprecedented time. So as long as they're not saying that and truly being honestly empathetic, there's a way to engage in a phone conversation that's very powerful. There's also a way to engage in a voicemail strategy that's very powerful, because now all voicemails, I mean, aren't they, are transcribed and sent to email. And so there's a way to be really powerful around that, just to add another really professional, succinct touch point to the person. But I do believe that it's just such an open space right now for salespeople that are willing to embrace the new cold call and what that looks like and to be bold enough to do it. The second thing I'll say is, if you think about this generation of salespeople coming up the ranks right now, did they grow up with a landline in their house? Guys, do they ever use their phone as a phone? And ladies, sorry. Do they use their phone as a phone? No, they actually hit decline on the calls so they can continue to use their phone for all the other purposes. They actually aren't proficient with using the phone. And so we're asking a generation that didn't grow up having to make phone calls, or at least in their teenage and young adult years. So we're teaching them a whole new method of communication that is not something they know how to do. Thankfully, I'm a 37-year-old millennial and I'm on the top end. But I grew up twisting the phone cord, you know, around my finger and like having people pick up the phone and being like, I want to call, you know, and siblings hating each other. So there's a lot about the phone that we grew up with that we're just used to that. Unfortunately, a lot of salespeople coming up the ranks, it is a complete foreign mechanism and form of communication. So like we have to get to very basic belief systems and ability to even have a phone conversation and for it to not be awkward and weird. But Scott, you've been far too quiet and I can't handle it. Disagree with me, say something, say anything.
You know, Mary, what I was going to say is when somebody picked up the phone in my house, it was when I was a kid, it was likely they were disconnecting my dial-up internet connection.
Yes.
So there's that. Here's what I think is dead. Cold calling isn't dead, but what should be dead is the cold part of any kind of outreach, right? There is so much information online, right? There's no reason you should ever be reaching out cold. And in fact, I would say you're unprepared, you're unprofessional if you're not spending, and it doesn't take long. It shouldn't take long, right? Spend a minute. Look at their LinkedIn profile. Look at where they are online. Maybe they're on YouTube. It doesn't matter. Find them, figure out how to pronounce their name, right? And reach out with something relevant. Here's the other thing. We talk so much about cold calling and cold outreach. And I don't think we're talking enough about the relationships and getting introductions, getting referrals, getting people to take you to that next conversation. So now it's not cold at all because Mary Marcus suggested that we should talk. That's why I'm calling. That's a great reason, right? And maybe Marcus just wasn't the right fit, but we had a conversation, right? I mean, the thing right. that I wanted to talk about today is two C's. And for me, it comes down to conversations and collaboration, right? If you boil down the essence of sales, it's about having productive conversations. So you first have to get to a conversation. How are you going to get there? And then have one. And so, Katie, I'm gonna ride your point, right? A conversation is not a pitch. It's not a presentation. It doesn't involve PowerPoint, right? And the more that we can collaborate and figure out how do I help this person? That's really all it is, right? How do I figure out how to serve them, how to take care of them? And Mary, I'm gonna jump on your human piece. That's what this is at the end of the day. That's the thing that differentiates each of us is we are human. We are different. Like we have to lean into that and lean into our quirks and our personality and the stuff that we're into and just bring it. You know what brings it the best? Marcus, I'm sure you got some comments on this.
Who brings it the best?
You do. Come on, man.
I mean, I'm all right. I'm gonna say, you know, probably maybe Mary, Katie, Scott, Tom. I'm just a regular guy out here. But you are so spot on, right? This is where, you know, I was reflecting on the whole conversation we've had so far, and it really breaks down to the top reps are very good at adapting. They're very good at adapting. So if they make that cold call, even if they're uncomfortable and they interrupt someone who is, you know, trying to get their boom, they're not like, oh, I'm so sorry. And then they hang up. They're like, oh, I totally get that. That happened to me yesterday as well. No sweat at all. You know, can I give you a call back? And like, totally cool. Yeah, that's what works much better. Great. No problem. Boom. They can adapt on the fly. They can flow given the situation. And when you think about, this is what I think about. Like you're talking about, you know, getting referrals and, you know, leading into that. I think about sales. There's like the red ocean and blue ocean. The red ocean is what everyone else is doing. And then there's a blue ocean. The stuff is harder to do. It is harder to get referrals and ask for them, but it's a blue ocean. It's harder to make calls out there because of call reluctance, but it's a blue ocean, right? It's harder to do personalization in emails and do research, but it's a blue ocean. So as a top rep, if you really want to stand out, go in the blue ocean. Do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. Do what's hard to do, and you will stand out. And then you add some adaptability, being able to flex on the phone a little bit and adjust and flow. Now, you have no problem hitting your quota, in fact, exceeding your quota as a result, because it's about being a human and adapting as things come your way.
And you can be so creative in that. And if you do that, it's so much more fun. Right. It's bringing your own personality. It's bringing your own humanity. Right. Maybe you've been a dad too long like me and dad jokes just become natural. OK, awesome. Let's work those in. Right.
There's nothing wrong with dad jokes.
No, nothing at all. Nothing at all. The only problem is I'm the only one that thinks they're funny. Thank you, Katie. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I do. I love my dad's jokes.
There you go. There you go. But again, it's find fun ways to engage. Think about what the experience is like for the person that you're reaching out to, right? Do you want a generic spammy sounding cold email, cold call, anything? No, have some fun. Show them like, hey, Katie, I took a minute. I learned about you. I know you're really into this. You know, here's what I thought would be relevant in given that particular dynamic, whatever, right? It doesn't have to be anything, and use other fun channels. Where are they? That's another thing I think we all need to really pay attention to is it's not the communication channel that works best for us. It's what works best for them. If they're not on LinkedIn, well, don't reach out to them on LinkedIn. That's stupid.
Exactly.
I will add one thing to piggyback onto what Scott said. Now, I've done a bunch of customer research where I went out and asked customers, what do you like? What are your pet peeves and stuff? And I was really surprised because one of the pet peeves that came up super often that came up in when I aggregated the data in the top five is actually saying, hey, I'm reaching out because Marcus Chan thought that we would be, thought that we should connect. That is actually a customer pet peeve. And the reason is that there are so many salespeople who lie about that, that they assume that we're lying. So what I always tell people is, yes, it's great to get referrals. Yes, it's great to get more of a warm lead rather than going in cold, but get Marcus to call that person or email that person and say, hey, Katie's going to be calling you. And you, sometimes it's a matter of just literally standing there, you know, in back in the days and maybe we're getting back into them when you are in the office and say, hey, would you mind doing that? And then you kind of awkwardly stand there until they do it. Or, smile. You know, you've got, right. Yeah, smile and just pause and just stand there until they actually do it. Because that to me, if you can't do that, then you really shouldn't be leading with that. You shouldn't be leading with, hey, Marcus told me to call you. It's okay to say it eventually, but not in the lead because they will. It is a pet peeve. Surprisingly, I was very surprised that came out as a pet peeve.
Well, two quick things there, right? One is write the intro email, or I mean, if they're not willing to pick up the phone, write a quick intro email for them, right? It's on us to take all that friction out and make it super easy for them, right? That's number one. Number two is never, ever, ever open with a lie. So Tom, Katie, right. You guys host podcasts, right? How many pitches do you get that start with, hey, I'm a big fan of your show. Lies. Right.
Yeah,
it's not true. I can tell immediately.
Them, Scott, when they say that,
you know, and again, if it is true, you have to be specific, mm-hmm. right? So if I'm going to say, hey, Marcus suggested that we talk because of X, you know, something like, again, it has to be real, because if you ever open a relationship on a lie, you are dead before you start. Stop it.
Well, I think it goes back, Scott, you said they just have to take a minute or two, right? It's all there for them. They can find out everything they need to jumpstart that call if they just spend a minute, if they really care. And I think this is where, you know, that sales rep has to care and really want to be good at what they're doing. Marcus, you did a poll. I think you did a poll recently talking about some of these same soft skills, right? And and what's most important. What did you find through that? What are the most important soft skills right now that people need?
Yeah, so it was, I think it was like 49% was running a powerful discovery, which I'm like, yep, exactly right. Because maybe they can't break through the noise, you know, hopefully they didn't lie, but they broke through the noise. But now they're actually in that meeting. They're going to cover pretty quickly. Are they following you know what or not? And that discovery tells you everything, right? Like, I'm sure you've all have met with people, a salesperson who did a terrible discovery. You're like, that was such a waste of my time. Versus the ones you sit down with, and they do such a good job, single thing, but they truly dive in deep. And you're like, wow, we really peeled all the layers of the onion. And I feel like you really know me. And now you can truly actually show me something that's going to help me. So it makes perfect sense. And this is what I've always believed. You know, the disco either makes or breaks the rest of your sales cycle. If you do a good job with the disco, it's going to shorten your sales cycle down. You'll close more deals. You'll have a better relationship, whether you do business or not. If you do a terrible job, you get ousted pretty quick. So the disco is where the magic is made. And that poll is pretty clear that people struggle with that.
I do think that sometimes people don't know what they need. I bet you more people than put on there actually need help with cold calling than they admit.
Yeah. So I actually thought instinctually, I'm like, first, I thought we have a lot of cold calling stuff, which is, I think it was like maybe still like 15, 20%. That was number two. And then it was disco, right? And it's one of those things where, you know, I saw, I'm like, that makes sense. And it was Richard Harris also ran a similar poll as well. His was like overwhelmingly cold call. I'm like, interesting. I wonder why they're so opposite. About the same number of votes. Maybe he's got a different audience that's hitting it. But I thought either way, it's, you know, in today's time, you know, sales is hard. Sales is definitely an art form mixed with some science, obviously, but it's hard. And it's not surprising that, you know, people struggle with, you know, cutting through the noise, booking more qualified meetings, effectively running the disco to actually lead to real conversations that are going to actually be fruitful for both parties.
Well, it might depend on the industry a little bit too. You know, I feel like some of the industries maybe get fed leads in a different way, whereas some sales reps have to create their own leads. So
the interesting part is 100%, right. 100%.
I don't think there's any PowerPoints for discovery. So that kind of goes back to where we started, right? Maybe that's where part of the problem comes in. Scott, you interview successful sales stars all the time for your podcast. What do you hear? Are they talking about discovery? Are they talking about closing? What are they talking about?
You know, it's interesting. I'm going to the discovery piece for sure, right? And it's funny how many people I've interviewed who obsess around the discovery, because to Marcus's point, it's the key to the deal. You know what and just to be really, really clear about who I interview, I only talk to active quota carrying individual contributors, and they have to be either the outright number one top performer, or I joke, I'm willing to settle for the top 1%. So that's where the bar is. You know what I've never had a conversation about in 100 and I don't know, 20 some odd episodes on that show? We've never talked about closing. Because when you run a good sales process, the close is a natural outcome. And the thing I hate about that word is it sounds like it's the end.
Yeah.
But the close, when somebody signs the agreement, that's the true beginning of your relationship with that customer, right? So what you really have to sell to is to the outcome, which happens way beyond the signed contract, right? And so that is what we need to be working around and understanding. What are the compelling events? Why does that need to happen? Why does it need to happen by that point? And how are we going to make sure that we're going to get there? When you structure your sales process and your sales conversations in that way, the close is just a natural one of those steps that you take together. It's not this big, oh my God, I have to say just the right thing and I have to ask you if you'd like a puppy for free or whatever the hell is going on. Like, none of that.
Yeah, I don't think it's the beginning. Go ahead, Katie.
I was just going to say, research backs that up. There's all this research that's been done, like some old school research on, you know, thousands and thousands of calls. And they show that the harder you try to close, the less likely it's going to close. And how the bigger the deal, the less likely you're going to need those call techniques. I think that's so true, Scott.
And I would say that too.
You don't feel good.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. You shouldn't feel like you need to take a shower. If you're feeling like that, you're selling wrong. Stop it.
Oh yeah.
That's the first time I've kind of heard it in those terms there, Scott.
That's why let me
rephrase it. I'm gonna improve my statement. If anybody in the process feels like they need to take a shower, you're doing it wrong. Please stop doing that.
All right, very good. Marcus, you were getting ready to say something?
No, I haven't showered for years, so it makes perfect sense. You know, it's great.
And that's why you are who you are. That's fantastic.
COVID's been good to you, man. Virtual world
COVID's
is perfect.
COVID's been good, man. COVID's been great. I feel bad for my wife and kid, but it's fine. It is what it is, right? So
it's a good thing it
rains. All jokes aside, though, it rains a lot in Portland. It washes the smell away, right? So, yeah, but...
Hey, listeners, it's Kelly Bloomer here to tell you the show is brought to you by Bloomer Associates. If you visit our website found in your show notes, you'll find we offer sales training, talent assessment for hiring and team development, and individual coaching for sales pros and managers. We bring over 30 years in media sales and leadership experience. If you enjoy listening to OK Bloomer, Teach Me Sales, ask how our team can work with your sales team for virtual meetings, roundtables, and motivational seminars. You can contact us through our website or call today, 919-267-7000. 9871. Now back to our show.
All jokes aside, though, it's one of those things where it's so spot on, right? It's when you do the process right, you feel good and they feel good. And if you did such a good job up front and if they end up not going with you, you should be shocked. You should be like, you should be confused, you know? And it's not because you didn't do a hard close, because you have truly uncovered their needs and you have shown a really good matchup aligned to what their needs are. And you should be more confused on why it's not moving forward. So that means, spot on, and take showers daily, at least once a day.
Good. Yeah. And hey, anybody who wants to give me a puppy when I sign up for something, I'm pretty happy too. So we'll talk about that as well. But so let's go now, because we've got a really good group here to, I think, help our superstars, our rock star performers. Mary, you had a thing recently talking about when you have that rock star, how do you get them to that next stage or that next level? So I'm sure we have some salespeople that are listening that are really good, right? They're usually the ones that are listening to podcasts. They're usually the ones that are trying to grow, because they realize what it takes. Let's share some advice. What do you do for that person who they are a rock star, but they want to get to that next level? What do they have to do? Is it all about that blue ocean, Marcus? What do we have to do to get to that next level?
Yeah, I would say the first thing you have to do is, it seems a little bit, I'll be careful how you word this, because people interpret like the numbers game the wrong way. You have to, number one, know exactly where you stand. This is across the board. I'm a firm believer, you have to start with the end in mind, but you have to first also realize, where are you currently? So for example, if you were looking to improve your game, and forget about stack ranking, forget about quota, that stuff is important to a certain extent, but if you really want to be the best version of you, you have to know where you stand. It's no different. If I want to lose weight, the first thing I do is I get on the scale. I can ask them exactly where I stand. So you look at every part of your whole sales process. So for example, let's say if you look at your top of the funnel work, you're trying to improve your emails. Hey, what's your current open rate? What's your response rate? What's your booking rate? Okay, if you're looking at your phone work, how many decision makers do you talk to? Do you actually truly book a meeting? How many are you actually progressing into an actual disco to a close or demo, whatever? Know every part of your whole sales process, every single conversion ratio, and have a very good idea for at least 6 months to a year, and start tweaking from there. Because you may find out, yeah, you know what? I am doing a really good job across the board of, getting a lot of really good meetings, but, they're not progressing to, an actual demo. Why is that? Can I improve my disco? Start working backwards. Can I improve my qualification on the first call? Can I improve, how I target? So when you start thinking that way, you start realizing you can improve your whole sales process. It doesn't mean you have to work harder. You just have to know where you stand and start working backwards. Or maybe, I've seen some people who are, maybe they come from a more transactional role. They have really crazy high activity from outbound, phone calls, emails, whatever, but their close is really low. And even though they're closing hard and doing all these things and whatever, and maybe they're being sleazy or not, who knows, but they're meeting with the wrong people, and they can still improve the top end. They could actually work less, but be more targeted and have better results or bigger deals as well. So start with knowing exactly where you stand and start working to tweak it first before you start making that change. Because you'll get to a certain point where you are the number one or top 1% in your industry, in the company you're at, where in order to get to the next level, to become even better, you have to change your environment. So maybe you're the big fish in the little pond, and maybe you're used to selling deals that were, up to six figures, but now you want to sell real enterprise deals, or deals, seven-figure deals and plus. That requires you to put yourself in a different environment. And if your company can't sustain that, once you master your numbers, now you must change your environment to help up-level you as well to get to next level too. Because ultimately, ideally, or as you continue to progress, you always want to be challenged and pushed. And if you ever hit a place where you're like, oh, I'm the best of the best. Are you though? Are you really the best of the best? Or can you go somewhere else and level up even more?
Being a former number one performer, and Scott, I think the first time that we reached out to you was to get me on your podcast, because I am a former number one rep, and I got the heart shut down because I was no longer carrying that quota and I didn't get it at the point. But when I got into the profession, I realized and it's so powerful. But what's that?
Scott turned you down?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Because I had gone from number one sales rep to CEO, and I was a CEO starting my firm. And so, yeah, I got shut down because I didn't meet the qualifications, but that's okay. That's okay. So coming from the
number one rep, former number one rep, of how do you take the best of the best and make them even better? Can I just give you what may be unpopular advice? I'm just going to tell you what I did. I became a CEO of my own business development role. Boom. And I actually just built my own team. So again, I don't know if this is like illegal to say this or whatnot, but I actually hired a virtual assistant. And someone not in the company to work on my life. And I also hired a personal assistant. So I had somebody that was running everything in my house and doing dry cleaning and cleaning and like managing my household. So I literally like had nothing to do that was distracting to me in my household. I hired a virtual assistant for all the things with my work, every component of my work that I could automate. So a lot of like updating the CRM and other things, helping with proposal creation and sending follow-up emails and whatnot. I started outsource pieces of that. The next thing that I did was I actually got people selling for me. So I doubled down on my effort to build my referral network and my strategic partners. And I found as many of the top performers in other industries that sold to my same somebody with non-competing products or services. And we bound together to create a little club where all that we did was walk each other into each other's deals. And it was a very like tight club because we were the best of the best of the best. And so we weren't just going to refer to like a banker, you know. And so our clients, they knew if we were making an introduction, like it had to be good. And we were super purposeful. So we used to sit down back when people like sat down and did things together in person, and we'd open our laptops and we would just say, who did you meet with this week? What new clients are you working with? Who's in need? And we would just sit there and trade lists and we'd hammer out all the introductions and help set up calls and meetings. And so we were extremely purposeful on that. So that's what I did. I became the CEO of my role and actually built people to help increase my efficiency. And again, I don't know if that's like good advice or bad advice, because not everyone can do that. However, the last thing is I looked inward, and to Marcus's point, I just looked at what my current sales process was, my sales cycle length, and I got wicked smart on how to reduce that. So I kept identifying all the pieces of friction or areas where it slowed down. So one little takeaway that you can actually use is we used to have to rely on a sales engineer for a third-party component of the technology that wasn't yet in our sandbox, if you will. And so what I did was being a top rep as I went to corporate, and I asked permission to have my demo environment have that one third-party technology, because I got granular and said, where am I getting slowed down in my sales process? And that was the one time I had to involve a third-party sales engineer, and that the scheduling was always so chaotic. So I went and I got the permission. I got it added. I got trained on it. And so I could demo my own technology all by myself. So there are things that number one sales reps do that are not in a playbook, that are not in a book out on the published market, that are not readily available information. They're not going to get it from a sales coach or mentor, especially someone inside the organization. I truly think the number one salespeople, they are their own CEOs. They're entrepreneurial. They know how to build a business and maximize. They understand the time is money, and they're just wicked smart in how they structure their day. And they just get creative where other salespeople wait for someone else to tell them what to do.
They get it done. I mean, that's why I love that, because that's exactly what it is. They're not blaming the company for lack of resources, lack of whatever. I don't have this sales, I don't have this tech stack. They may not have the resources or whether they do or not, but they are highly resourceful. That's a perfect example right there. That's amazing. That was an amazing story. I love that.
Thank you.
I was talking to his top sales rep the other day, and he was saying that they, in the hospital space, they were needing to understand the CFO better and understand where their finances were coming in, because they were starting to offer them things that the CFO was saying, well, hang on, if we do that, then our taxes are going to be different because it's an operational cost versus capital cost. And my sales rep said, so I just Googled it. Everybody's complaining about, well, we don't understand the CFO better. We don't understand the hospital, you know, finances. Just Google it. Just Google hospital finances. And
right.
You know, instead of waiting for your company to give you that training, just learn it. And then you can be the one that's teaching other people. Right. So I think that's so true, Mary.
Yeah. Yeah. Mary, you definitely do sound like the folks that have been on my podcast. And I know you don't hold a grudge, but you can find Mary on our Daily Sales Tips podcast, and we are still friends. So, but you know what? That's the stuff, right? Like if I were to boil everything down, and what I've learned from talking to over 100 people like Mary, who've been at the very top, they have figured out how to be, and Marcus, you said this, you had this line in your comment, they figured out how to be the best versions of them. And that is the secret sauce, right? You can't try and be Marcus. You can't try and be Katie.
Right.
Like, what they do is unique to them. That's what makes them special. I can't run your playbook. I have to run my playbook. I have to understand, I have to look inward, like Mary said, right? And understand what makes me good. Because if that's what makes me good, I bet if I double down on that and do more of that, right, I can get to great. Right. And I think that's one of the disconnects that we see in sales leadership today is coaching people in that way and helping them get to the best version of them and not putting them in a box that looks like every other box. That's hard. It's hard. Right. And just like we were talking about before with the prospecting, it's the hard stuff that breaks through and generates extraordinary results. It's not trying to look like everybody else and do what everybody else is doing. Do the best you, right? And if you're already on a good path, if you're already good and you're doing good things, you probably already know what you need to do.
Oh yeah.
So what would the best version of you be doing right now? Just freaking do that. And I bet you're going to get better.
That's it. Yeah. Well, the big thing too, is you have to be willing to do something different to get different results. And I feel like that's a commitment that people have to say yes to themselves. And just giving you a glimpse into my life, our company, we are scaling right now. And this is a very serious phase of growth for us. And I decided to quit drinking. And I quit drinking on January 1st. I said, I'm going to do it for 100 days because I'm going to need energy that I don't have right now. I'm going to need clarity that I don't have right now. And if I'm going to buckle down and be the CEO that my company needs me to be and our clients need me to be, then I have to do something different than I was doing in Q4 of 2020. So with that, honestly, the results have been so good. And having a CEO that is so clear and calm and not triggered and communicative and just feeling so in control, I've not started drinking again and I'm going into month 5. And so for me, it's like, it's one of those, and this is something just learned from my past behaviors and being that former top rep. Like if you want a better result than what you're getting today and you're already the best, then you have to, it's not magic. Like it's not just going to come out because you willed it into existence. Like that's part of it. You have to envision it and create that. But then you have to step into that and be willing to do something bigger. And sometimes it just comes down to like, we are the vehicle, our bodies and our brains, we're the machine that makes it happen. So you got to put yourself into the shop. You got to get a tune-up. You have to do something different if the machine's going to be expected to run at a different level. And so I also feel like there's just that acknowledgement that sometimes people, and you look at that with performers and athletes, like they want to go to the next level. You have to continue to ensure that the body and the brain that's going to get you there is in top shape. So those are little things, again, I just don't feel like a lot of people talk about, you know, managers are like, well, let's open up the CRM and let's look at how many emails you sent last week. And let's see if we can increase that by 10%. I'm like, we're so talking about the wrong part of this. Anyway, yeah. More activity can be good, but it also could be mindless.
You're so right on, Mary. And I had to learn for myself, I have to work out 6 days a week and I have to start my day that way because the days that I don't, it's just off the rails. It's yep. The same thing, right? And it starts with like, we are our own engine. You got to freaking take care of that engine. And congrats. That is such an awesome accomplishment.
Thank you.
There's a great Jim Rohn quote, right? Which is, you know, when you work hard at your job, you make a living. But when you work hard on yourself, you make a fortune. And it's so spot on because, you know, everyone wants to achieve better results in life, you know, from personal, professional. But what they don't realize is who they have been has led to the current situation. If you want to achieve greater things, you have to become more. And that's mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. This is why it's so powerful. This is why I'm obsessive about morning routines, even though all my friends and family make fun of me. But it's very intentional because I know when I do it, I feel awesome. And when I feel awesome, I'm going to be better at my day job. I'll be more focused. I can block out distractions better. I can be more on my game. But when I don't do it, I'm not. And it's all 100% controllable if we choose control. Otherwise, if we don't run it, it'll run us. And then suddenly a year goes by, we're like, wow, maybe next year will be better. But you can change right now by having the right habits in place every single day.
All going to start with you. And for so many people, that's the difficult part, is understanding how to get started right there, because nobody can really help you for the most part with that. You have to know it yourself and want it. We're going to be running out of time soon, but I did want to get to one last thing before you all go, because you're all influencing on LinkedIn. You all spend a lot of time on it. And I think it was Katie that shared a poll recently, and it kind of got me a little bit thinking. I think over 50% of the responders on your poll said you never, ever pitch on LinkedIn. So if each of you, just for a real quick minute as we go around, how does somebody be successful on LinkedIn? Because a lot of people there, they're prospecting, they're sharing content. They're looking for ways to reach people on LinkedIn, but they're not supposed to be pitching. So Katie, what came out of that and what would you share?
Yeah. And it wasn't what the question wasn't whether you are pitching, it's whether you should be pitching. So there were a lot of people that were responding that they weren't salespeople and they were like, please don't pitch me. I don't want those pitches. So I personally think that it's fine to pitch on LinkedIn occasionally if all you're pitching is a meeting or a call. I think that's perfectly fine. But I think it's one of those things where, to me, LinkedIn is about building those relationships. So even if you're a sales rep, you know, we're all creators. So we're all on LinkedIn, obviously, all the time. And we get pitched probably way more often than we pitch other people. But an average sales rep, you know, they have a lot of legal. I get a lot of pushback from people saying, well, my legal department won't let me pitch this. My legal department won't let me talk about this particular product in this certain way. So I think as an average sales rep who's just listening to this, what they need to remember is that LinkedIn is about providing value. And if you can provide value, whether that's in an interesting story or whether that's in, that is maybe talking about your products, but it's not like LinkedIn should be something where you're, you know, linking to an article about how great your product is. That's not providing anyone any value. So if we can provide value and start creating those relationships, then things are going to naturally happen within LinkedIn. And you're going to naturally get to somebody where they're like, sure, let's have a conversation. I don't mind.
Brand, influence, and community. That's it. It's your personal brand. The way that you share and your thought leadership, if you're growing your connections, LinkedIn automatically, when you have a new connection, will say your new connection, Mary, just shared a post. And if they're like, oh, that's my new connection, I'm going to go see what they wrote. LinkedIn in the early stages of a new connection will pull them towards your content to see if they're going to interact and engage with your content or not. And then it's going to determine if your content is then prioritized in their newsfeed moving forward. So if you're really smart as an having influence over your community and you have a personal brand, it should all be everything that you should post should be as direct to your audience in their language about your thought leadership and how you solve their problems and that you can be great in that field. It is not asking for meetings. In my opinion, it's not doing any of that. It is simply just being a thought leader because that attracts people to say, wow, that's a smart person who gets me and they might actually be a valuable resource. So it's not putting something in front of them and making them make the decision on if you're valuable or not. It's allowing that attraction to come to you. So then next would be through that brand. It's how you portray yourself on your LinkedIn profile. It shouldn't be all your awards and accolades in your current position. It should just be a description of your ideal buyer and how you solve their problems. And then from there, because when they connect, they're like, oh, I wasn't planning on connecting with this person, but that's funny. They get me and they know who I am. So maybe that's a valuable connection. From there, people love being loved. We're human beings. We crave that. So the next thing, don't slide into their DMs. You need to be in their comments and liking their content and to be taking what they've posted, even if it's an old post or an old article, comment on it, write about it, say something meaningful. You can go into their DMs if you don't treat that like email or a novel, but treat it like a text message and you're able to actually write something super short, like a chat. I realize you wrote that article 6 months ago, but I loved it and it really spoke to me. I don't usually engage with a lot of HR directors, but I just found this to be really powerful. Do you mind if I share this with a couple of my other clients? Because I think that they would really love to hear your voice on this topic. Holy cow, you didn't ask for a meeting. You didn't pitch. And they're like, who's this person? Whoa, that's a sales rep for Paychex. That's super weird. I wonder if they do something other than sales. Why would they want to be sharing my article with another HR director? Maybe they're more integrated within the community. You guys, it's like so not hard. Be a normal human, be a normal person. Don't cram things down their throat and shove it in their face. But there's ways between brand influence and community and actually getting people to like rally around and create your tribe. You can do that and you earn relationships that eventually turn into potentially, if they're qualified and that person has a need, could be a great fit for a sales transaction down the road.
Excellent. Excellent. You know what? Unless somebody has a closing thought, I think that could be a very good way to wrap up today.
I've got one quick idea for you. So if you've figured out anything about me, it's that I'm obsessed with learning from the best of the best. And I started a project about a year and a half ago called the LinkedIn Sales Stars, because I wanted to figure out what are the best people on LinkedIn doing. And so there's a ton of great resources. In fact, we've automated the entire process. If you go to successalizer.com, you can get your own score on LinkedIn and get access to all of those resources, and everything's free.
Fantastic. Yeah, do I get a puppy if I go?
There's three puppies. You get three puppies.
Okay. They're all free.
So Marcus, final thought. One last thought. I think it's also important to understand too is LinkedIn's a tool just like any other platform. Okay. You can either use it properly and you can generate a lot of leads and you can build a lot of great relationships, or use it improperly and you can damage relationships. And I think the way I think about any type of platform is you have to think about, you know, who your customer is and where they're coming from. And when you think about even a sales funnel of, you know, awareness, interest, decision, action, most of the time when you do that first outreach, they don't know anything about you. But if you use all the tools that's built within LinkedIn, you can build that awareness. And that'll eventually lead to the interest and decision and action. But understanding how to do it properly, just like Mary mentioned, which is going to lead to more conversations, more brand, more influence, and more community. But understand it's a tool that can be used right or wrong, so be really cognizant of it. But ultimately, think about your end customer, who's receiving, whether it's content or DMs. Think about how they're receiving it and go from there.
Fantastic. Gang, I want to thank you all for joining us today. I know our listeners had a great time and they picked a lot of good information out of this. I hope to do this at some point. Let's see, maybe the middle of the country, maybe it's in Austin. Maybe the five of us can get together in person sometime. That would be a nice thing to shoot for.
So, come on down. Awesome. You can come do it in October. Awesome. Just come to the Sales Success Summit. That's the easy way to do it.
Great plug.
We will put information on that in the show notes, so that'll be perfect. Gang, thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you all again soon.
Thanks so much.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
So, Tom, is this where we tell everybody about your new book?
I think it is, Kelly. Teach Me Sales is a 21-day roadmap to sales success.
So if you want to be success in sales, the road to success is always under construction. Map out the best route for the help of a proven sales leader with over 30 years of experience. Tom shares his insights into how to succeed in sales. His 21-day roadmap will help you build the daily habits to not only find your path, but to take the steps necessary to excel and prosper along it. Each chapter is designed to encourage you to commit to that extra degree of effort to invest in yourself and your future along this rewarding and personal journey.
So, Kelly, do you think we should share some of the advanced praise for Teach Me Sales?
I think we should. Like Jeffrey Gittimore, author of The Little Red Book of Selling, he said, "You don't get great at sales in a day. You get great at sales day by day." Teach Me Sales is the daily formula that puts you on the path to a lifetime of selling success. Buy it, read it, implement it. And then David Cottrell, author of Monday Morning Leadership and Quit Drifting, Lift the Fog, and Get Lucky, he said, "Teach Me Sales is an engaging, entertaining, and enlightening book. Tom Bloomer shares his gift of storytelling, humor, habits, processes, and encouragement to guide you to become a complete, successful salesperson. Invest 5 minutes a day for 21 days and enjoy your sales and personal growth. You can do it."
Thanks, Kel. We are so excited. I hope everyone that's interested enjoys the book. We have a link for the book in our show notes. We look to join you on your sales journey. So that's it. That's today's show. Okay, Boomer, teach me sales.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Be sure to subscribe and follow. We hope you make us a part of your week. And don't forget to share with your friends and coworkers.
Should we mention the website?
Sure. The website, okayboomerteachmesales.com.
And where can they engage with us?
LinkedIn @Thomas J. Bloomer.
We hope to see you there.